Hello, everybody, and welcome to our 15th Treatise on White Magic webinar commentary. Wonderful book. Something we all should study, and that I find myself restudying after 30 years, I guess, almost that much. In our last webinar 14, we asked, what is the disciple? For what is the disciple, says DK? He is one who seeks to learn a new rhythm of meditation, often, to enter a new field of experience, the world of the higher mind and beyond, and to follow the steps of that advanced humanity, the masters, who have trodden ahead of him the path, leading from darkness to light, from the unreal to the real, and eventually from death to immortality, from chaos to beauty, and from the individual to the universal. He has tasted the joys of life in the world of illusion and has learnt their powerlessness to satisfy and hold him. And now he is in a state of transition between the new and old states of being. He is vibrating between the condition of soul awareness and form awareness. He is seeing double. Of course, an achieved high initiate or a master goes beyond this stage of seeing double. His spiritual perception grows slowly and surely as the brain becomes capable of illumination from the soul via the mind. So that's the keying up of the brain cells. As the intuition develops, the radius of awareness grows, and new fields of knowledge unfolds. This question of the radius of awareness, a very important phrase, because we are so cribbed, cabined, and confined by our usual self-conception. So this is called the radius of awareness, and eventually it encompasses the entire planet, eventually, the entire solar system, the entire, cosmic logos or super cosmic logos, eventually the entire galaxy. I know it seems far-fetched, and we're not talking about now. And eventually, in the return to the true nature of identity, which is the one and only pantheistic logos, universal logos, to the entire one being of cosmos. So that takes us to where we are really beginning this number 15. The first field of knowledge receiving illumination might be described as comprising the totality of forms to be found in the three worlds of human endeavor, etheric, astral, and mental, the 18 lower subplanes. Well, you know, we don't even know the entirety of our dense physical plane, yet alone the etheric. And to us, the astral plane holds many mysteries, and certainly the mental plane does. So this field of 18 lower subplanes may receive illumination, but it'll be a long time before we are omniscient with regard to it. The master is the master of those 18 lower subplanes, and with regard to anything that can be known, he can know, which does not mean he holds it all in his mind simultaneously, because they function under the law of economy and don't burden themselves with the unnecessary. The would-be disciple, maybe we can list ourselves that way, through this process becomes aware of his lower nature and begins to realize the extent of his imprisonment and, as Patanjali puts it, the modifications of the versatile psychic nature. Becomes aware of the lower nature and the extent of his imprisonment. I mean, as long as we're in prison and don't know it, we don't wake up. And when we begin to contrast an intuitive freedom and compare it with what our normal state of confinement is, then we awaken to it and to awaken to the situation and try to do something about it. We really become sincere and willful and determined and persistent. The hindrances to achievement and the obstacles to progress are revealed to him, and his problem becomes specific. You know, once he has been receiving illumination with respect to his own condition and the outer or wider conditions. So finally, we begin to know what the hindrances are, what our glamours are, which have surreptitiously held us in prison. You know, the thing about glamour is you don't see it. You know, it's, oh, that's just the way I am. And that's never good enough. Other people see it and how it may be blocking our progress, but we don't see it. And finally, we awaken to it. Frequently, then, he reaches the position in which Arjuna found himself, confronted by enemies who are those of his own household, confused as to his duties, because after all, doesn't the personality have to be preserved? And discouraged as he seeks to balance himself between the pairs of opposites, soul and personality. He is the disciple, you know. The disciple at this point is neither soul nor personality. The disciple is neither soul nor personality. The disciple really is the soul in incarnation, the soul immersed within the personality, at least disciples at our stage. There are higher disciples who are, have long transcended the personality. His prayer then should be the famous prayer of India, must be ages old, uttered by the heart, comprehended by the head, and supplemented by the ardent life of service to humanity. How beautifully that is stated, the ardent life of service to humanity. The Gayatri then unveiled to us the face of the true spiritual sun. I suppose our monad, or the monad of the planetary logos or of the solar logos, there are many true spiritual suns in ascending order, hidden by a disk of golden light. Well, that is the disk of the sun. But on the other hand, our monad is hidden by the egoic lotus, a causal body which can be as a disk of golden light, that we may know the truth and do our whole duty, which is our monadic name, our monadic place, as we journey to thy sacred feet. Unveil to us the face of the true spiritual sun, hidden by a disk of golden light, that we may know the truth and do our whole duty as we journey to thy sacred feet. We come to the low position with respect to the great deity, and we start on our work of becoming like that deity. But we have to begin at the bottom and work our way to the top. There is a hierarchical structure to all of cosmos, and even though we are the whole, we are hierarchically arranged as well as the part. As he perseveres and struggles, you know, the life of every disciple and aspirant, surmounts his problems and brings his desires and thoughts under control. There we have, you know, the strong Saturn operating in the seventh ray and the first ray. The second field of knowledge is revealed. The knowledge of the self in the spiritual body, knowledge of the ego as it expresses itself through the medium of the causal body. The causal body is the instrument and the ego is the type of consciousness. The Karana Sarira, and that's the causal body. And awareness of that source of spiritual energy, which is the motivating impulse behind the lower manifestation. Right. Okay, so it is, as I said, Sometimes it is, as I said. The disk of golden light is pierced, and the true sun is seen. The path is found, and the aspirant struggles into ever clearer light. Well, the analogy to the sun is the causal body, is the egoic lotus, and the angel of the presence helps us to pierce the blinding disk of golden light. This is what it means to that the sun veils certain planets. The sun as the personality veils the reception of certain planets, but there's still a higher type of veiling. The causal body itself is a veil when compared with still higher spiritual energies of the triad and the monad, which also can be symbolized, of course, by the sun. But we have to look at the sun in various aspects. As the knowledge of the self and as the consciousness of that which the self sees, hears, and knows and contacts is stabilized, the master is found. So, you know, as we penetrate into the egoic lotus and stabilize our consciousness within it, we find the master of our ashram, the ashram towards which we have been tending according to our soul ray. His group of disciples is contacted. The plan for the immediate share of work he must assume is realized and gradually worked out on the physical plane. So those of us who are, you know, working assiduously, ardently, fervently on the physical plane to carry out some aspects of the plan, we may assume that in our higher consciousness, we have contacted the group of disciples. Well, certainly that, even in our normal consciousness, we realize that, but the master as well. And the brain does not retain all of these contacts, but for some it does. And those moments are really important because those moments confirm the accepted discipleship of such an individual. Thus, the activity of the lower nature decreases, and the man little by little enters into conscious contact with his master and his group. He has dropped the hindrances or overcome them, and therefore thought form. Therefore, THF. Well, I don't like that. Let's do this here. TRF. Therefore. Okay, hopefully that will be clear. Therefore, he presents no barrier to such contact. On our side, we have to drop the hindrances or overcome the hindrances. We have to be aware of what they are, and many of them are subtle and masquerade as our virtues. You know, our virtues become our vices. If we hug to ourselves a particular virtue overmuch, it may be the indication of a vice. It's we're on the path of purification for a long time. And there's always need for further purification, which means submitting ourselves to higher and higher fires. Maybe the lower obstacles have been burnt out, and maybe they no longer exist, but there will always be higher purification. So, you know, fire from the beginning to the end, the universe in a way is fire. And we must not get used to the idea that no further purification is needed. I've seen people do that, and they miss an opportunity. But this follows upon the lighting of the lamp, the aligning of the lower and higher, and the downflow of illumination to the brain. Now, this is a good way of putting it, and I think it's something that we should remember. The lighting of the lamp, is a matter of alignment, and the downflow of illumination. This is accomplished, well, you know, through meditation, certainly, study, and service. It's good to have those three so frequently emphasized. They are so foundational to everything we hope to do, and, you know, perhaps are doing. It is essential that these points should be grasped and studied by all aspirants so that they take the needed steps and develop the desired awareness. We cannot rest back simply reading and not meditating or serving. There is a tendency for some types to do that. Until this is done, until the needed steps are taken, no matter how willing he may be, the master, no matter how willing he may be, is powerless and can take no steps to admit a man to his group and thus take him into his auric influence, making him an outpost of his consciousness. In other words, accepted discipleship requires concerted action on the part of the would-be accepted disciple. Every step of the way has to be carried out by a man himself, and there is no short or easy road out of darkness into light. You know the story that the Dalai Lama wept when asked, what is the short way? And, you know, being a man of experience, he knows there's no short way, and if a disciple appears to surge ahead, it's only because of long and maybe hidden, humble, patient preparation, which peaks, and then the surge seems to come all at once, but it's been well prepared for. The next part of chapter one here, or rule one, is the way of the disciple. The white magician is ever one who, through conscious alignment with his ego, with his angel, angel of the presence, as a representative, representative of the solar angel, is receptive to his plans. And purposes, and therefore capable of receiving the higher impression. So I guess the word his here refers to the ego or angel. You know, it is, let's just say, what do you have to be receptive to? What do we have to be receptive to? Shouldn't end with a preposition, but there we are. It is the wisdom of the angel of the presence and our own accumulated wisdom through many lives, and which dwell or are found or is found within the periphery of the ego eclipse. I mean, we've learned a lot in the past, and that learning may not be always in our minds, but when a situation arises where that learning is required, it may be evoked. Not that we know to call for it, but it may simply appear because it's been stored. So, you know, this is another way of saying, we must be attentive to our own accumulated wisdom. And we all have it, you know. In the causal body, there is stored nothing which may be considered of a negative or evil nature. There's only the good, and the only differences between causal bodies are the equipped and non-equipped causal bodies. Those with some blank areas need more work. Those that are completely filled out perhaps are ready to be sacrificed on the pyre for the sake of the race at the fourth degree. We must remember that while magic works from above downward and is the result of solar vibration, he wanted to stay away from the lunar magic. It's nothing but trouble and disease and evil come with it, and not the impulses emanating from one or other of the lunar petries. The downflow of the impressing energy from the solar petri is the result of his internal recollectedness. I mean, okay, this is a really important statement. You know, the, let's just say, making a man a white magician, MGM, okay, white, all right, I'm a little bit, I know there's a white magician in there somewhere. Okay, MGN. All right, I'll do that. We'll call it that. White magician, making a man a white magician. Calls for considerable expenditure of effort on the part of the supervising angel of the presence or solar angel. So, you know, there's a down-gazing soul, an inner recollectedness on the part of the supervising solar entity. The indrawing of his forces. You know, this is a labor of love. This is a sacrifice. This is a sacrifice of time and effort on the part of the angel of the presence prior to sending them, these forces, concentratedly to his shadow man and his steady meditation upon the purpose and the plan. So remember, the meditation is occurring above as well as below, as the disciple meditates. It may be of use to the student if he here remembers that the ego, as well as the logos, is in deep meditation during the whole cycle of physical incarnation. Yes, but that meditation may not necessarily be upon the progress of his shadow man. Let's just say the ego, I usually capitalize it, the ego has much to meditate upon, which pertains to its own development and process. Anyway, later, when there is sufficient development of the lower man and some, you know, sufficient mental responsiveness exists and emotional and physical refinement and so forth, then there is a very concentrated effort to bring the man up. Later, the ego tempts through great concentration to bring the lower man up, raise him. Anyway, when that time comes, and there is this really downward-gazing soul and attentiveness to the progress of the outer man, which is us as a monad in extension, the solar angel of the presence is also a monad. in extension, but a much more advanced monad in terms of its outer expression. And we are a less advanced monad in extension, and the greater monad in extension helps us through its meditation. This meditation is cyclic in nature. The Petri involves sending out to his reflection rhythmic streams of energy, which streams are recognized by the man concerned as his high impulses, his dreams, and aspirations. And this is one of those sentences, you know, that over the years has always stood out to me and invokes from us, calls upon us to meditate rhythmically so that it's possible for these streams of energy to be noticed and absorbed rather than simply deflected because we're not paying meditative attention. So, this meditation from the Petri, the extended Petri, the Petri extended into the causal body, into the egoic lotus, is cyclic in nature. The Petri involves sending out to his reflection rhythmic streams of energy, which streams are recognized by the man concerned as his high impulses, his dreams, his aspirations. So next time, you know, you are hit by great possibilities, high impulse, dream of what may be, an aspiration towards a state which does not yet exist, think about the possible source of these dreams. Being a being of greater development who is sacrificially associated with you and is supervising your upliftment. Therefore, it will be apparent why workers in white magic are ever advanced and spiritual men. For the reflection is seldom responsive to the ego or the solar angel until the many cycles of incarnation have transpired. With these sentences, I have been very familiar. And they offer such sound analysis and good advice about the need to achieve a certain spiritual vibratory status before we really begin to pay attention. But if we're reading a book like this and we stick with it and we stick with the Tibetans' presentations, we probably are giving the indication that we stand at this point of what he calls advanced man, spiritual man. Advanced man is not quite necessarily spiritual man. I'm hoping that all of us are either spiritual human beings or are on the border of that. Therefore, it will be apparent why workers in white magic are ever advanced and spiritual men, for the reflection is seldom responsive to the ego or the solar angel until many lives of incarnation have transpired. I'm thinking about the despair of addicted people and how they reach out to their higher power. The despair of addicted people causes them to reach out to their higher power. And we know, you know, what's behind that word higher power. You know, even though such people are not yet maybe inclined to get into the technicalities of occultism, it is the waiting, informing entity on the higher mental plane and beyond that is beginning to look towards them and help them overcome their desire for substance abuse, any kind of abuse, any kind of overdoing it in relation to one of the lower vehicles. The solar Petri communicates with his shadow or reflection by means of the Sutratma, That's the life thread. We're familiar with that idea, right? The life thread, which passes down through the bodies to a point of entrance in the physical brain. So, let's just say, and we know it to be true, the solar petri, angel of the presence, angel of the presence, solar angel actually does enter into the physical mechanism of the man, of his, the physical mechanism of its shadow. So to a point of entrance in the physical brain, if I might so express it, but the man as yet cannot focus or see clearly in any direction. So obviously the influence begins earlier than the man can really register the influence. But all of this is under law and order, and there is a great power of goodness working towards the fulfillment of purpose. We have to count on that, have faith in that, trust that, and know that there is guidance, and we're not entirely on our own in the individual sense, just the way we would help a young child or one of our own children. You know, we don't just let them try to do all things themselves when they can't. We set up circumstances which help to guide them aright, and so do our solar parents, you might say, set up the circumstances, the energy conditions through various incarnations that will lead us into correct performance. Anyway, we're not seeing clearly, is what he is saying. Man, at this stage of the beginning of solar angelic influence, we do not yet see clearly. Even though the influence is there, if he looks backwards, he can see only the fogs and miasmas of the plane of illusion and fails to be interested. And by the plane of illusion, we don't only mean the mental plane. The plane of illusion is the astral plane, or has often been called so. If he looks forward, he sees a distant light, lead kindly light, you know, which attracts him, but he cannot as yet see that which the light reveals. So here it seems to confirm that light can be seen, and is not simply the revealer of that which can be seen. That has to be investigated. So anyway, backward or forward, there is no recognition. There is no incentive to move backward unless one is rather sick, you know. And I suppose some people move backward for safety, or what they imagine will be safety. But you can't go back. That story, and I saw that, was a movie called A Trip to Bountiful, Colorado. It's about an old lady who was, she was wonderful, Jessica, was it Tandy, actress, looking back because her life was so circumscribed in the care of her children. And of course, she came from the town of Bountiful, which sounds wonderful, as if everything she could ever want was there. And she broke away, snuck away, eluded her children, who had her kind of in a bit of a well-meaning prison, found her way back to Bountiful, and there was nothing there, nothing there. It was a very sad, but the old saying, you can't go back, you know. And being tight as I am with Cancer rising, I sometimes think about going back. I contact my old friends and find some of them want nothing to do with me. Occasionally they do. Okay, so if he looks forward, he sees the distant light, which attracts him, but he cannot see as yet what the light reveals. If he looks around, he sees but shifting forms and the cinematograph of the form side of life. Not too attractive, really. Nothing too attractive. If he looks within, he sees the shadows cast by the light and becomes aware of much impedimenta, which must be discarded before the light. He sees and the distance can be approached and then enter within him. What a vision. Then he can know himself as light itself, as the Christ does. I am the light of the world. The Buddha, I am the light of the world. Hermes Trismegistus, I am the light of the world. And walk in that light and transmit it likewise to others, walking in the light one is. I'm just going to sort of, loosely underline that whole bit. This is the condition of the disciple. Of the disciple when the light, oops, don't want that. Light begins to influence him. He recognizes his condition, and it is not very free, nor very powerful, and much work to be done is revealed. Work to be done. I like that one. Let me put it in. Oh, this is no good. All right, not that, not that. All right. Work to be done. Always abbreviating, in the hope that it will save time later. It is perhaps well to remember that the stage of discipleship is in many ways the most difficult part of the entire ladder of evolution. Well, I suppose, at first ignorance is bliss, and what we don't know won't hurt us, and later we know what we're doing, and we're not drawn backwards so often. But aspiration and discipleship, we're torn in two directions, and the fourth ray nature of our particular kingdom emerges painfully in the consciousness. The solar angel is unceasingly in deep meditation. And, as DK says, also leave your solar angel some time for its own meditation. But, the solar angel is really paying attention. And one day when we've been to Sirius, or many of us will do that, and we return to the next solar system, and we are supervising the up-and-coming human beings, we'll have our own meditations to pursue, but we will be importuned by the necessity of meditating upon the one we supervise. The impulses of energy emanating from him are increasing in vibratory rate and are becoming more and more powerful. Notice DK is calling the solar angel him. Doesn't mean it's not a her. It's just, it's personalizing it somewhat. So more and more and more powerful impulses are coming from the solar angel. You know what I'm going to do? This is, I'm going to make this a double. I'm going to call this the Solar Angel. Angel of the Presence. As if they are the same being, they really are, but I think one. My present understanding of this is one is the extension of the other. Solar angel, angel of the presence. Okay. The energy is affecting more and more the forms through which the soul is seeking expression and endeavoring to control. And here, you know, basically he shows us the word. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm always doing that. The word soul here, word soul here is equivalent, no, equivalent to the solar angel. Okay. So this, anyway, there's a certain fluidity in these words, you know. Soul, solar angel, angel of the presence. Maybe angel of the presence is a more technical term for a kind of particular function of the solar angel within the egoic lotus. Whereas the solar angel per se does have other work to do, other than simply supervising its shadow man. The angel of the presence, however, is that part of the solar angel which is really immersed and attentive to the shadow man. And you know, this has to do with the divisibility of consciousness, or the ability of a high entity to do many things at the same time. This is ultimate in multitasking. This brings me to the consideration of the seventh point I made in my earlier analysis of Rule One. I said, the soul's meditation is rhythmic and cyclic in nature, as is all else in cosmos. The soul breathes and its form lives thereby. So, you know, this breathing relates to the Sutatma. The life thread, the life and the breath are one. But it's not only the life that comes, it's the consciousness as well. So it's life and consciousness, but now we're concentrating perhaps on life. Let's see. The rhythmic nature of the soul's meditation must not be overlooked in the life of the aspirant. So it's not only the life, we are also talking about the consciousness. So here we are talking about the consciousness, which is human consciousness is supplemented by solar angelic consciousness, by the consciousness of the angel of the presence. There is an ebb and flow in all nature, and in the tides of the ocean, we have a wonderful picturing of an eternal law. When's the ebb? When's the flow? And can we cooperate with that? As the aspirant adjusts himself to the tides of the soul life, he begins to realize that there is ever a flowing in, a vitalizing and a stimulating, which is followed by flowing out as sure and as inevitable as the immutable laws of force. And you know, DK at some point talks about lives in that way too, lives which are on the flow and other lives which are on the ebb. Well, maybe here is where it is, I'm not sure. This ebb and flow can be seen functioning in the processes of death and incarnation. I guess that's an ebb, isn't it? Flowing into incarnation and withdrawing from incarnation. It can be seen also over the entire process of a man's lives. Yes, it is here that he's discussing that. For some lives can be seen to be apparently static and uneventful, at least in the beginning, or, you know, before the stage of real conscious spiritual development begins, slow and inert from the angle of the soul's experience, whilst other are vibrant, full of experience and growth. Well, I suppose by the time we really commit to becoming the soul in full consciousness, maybe the tamasic lives, uneventful, slow, inert, are fewer, and we're more subject to the guna of rajas. And eventually, sattva will take over. This should be remembered by all of you who are workers when you are seeking to help others to live rightly. Are they on the ebb, or are they being subjected to the flow of soul energy? And I'm sure there are periods, also within any life which either ebb or flow. And maybe, you know, those can be correlated with astrological cycles, and probably with ray cycles, which are maybe a little harder to grasp when looking at a particular incarnation. We might get the soul raised, but what about the cycles, you know? Do we start from zero and say, well, first ray cycles every year, second ray cycles every 5 years, third ray cycles every 9 years, fourth ray cycles every 2.5 years, fifth ray cycles every 3.5 years, sixth ray cycles every 1.5 years, and seventh ray cycles every 7 years. That derivation of 2.5, 3.5, and 2.5 and 3.5, that is the work that was done by Stephen Pugh in his study of the rays, and DK seems to point to the number 15 or 1.5 or 150 or 1500 when it comes to the sixth ray. So, are they passing through a period of temporary quiescence in a life or in a portion of a life, preparatory to greater impulse and effort, so that the work to be done must be that of strengthening and stabilizing in order to enable them to stand in spiritual being, or they're being subjected to a cyclic inflow of forces? So a lot of wisdom about cycles is needed when we want to help people and ourselves, if we wish to help others and ourselves. We need to know something about astrological astrology. Oh, why can't I get that? I can't get astrological. Well, astrological cycles and the, how about typing, huh? And the more subtle ray cycles. The rays are always more subtle than the astrology, because with astrology you have, you know, tangible bodies in space and their positions, and with the rays they are related to those tangible bodies, but they also come in on their own numerical structuring. So in this case, the worker must seek to aid in the direction and utilization of the energy, which, if misdirected, will eventuate in wrecked lives. People can't handle what's coming in, right? We see it all the time. But which, when wisely utilized, will produce a full and fruitful service. So this is, what can we say here? Advice to the psychological spiritual counselor, of which DK is a master. And, you know, people like Roberto Assagioli, developed great skill in this. And, you know, the true developing esoteric psychologist, whereas the true esoteric psychologist is the master or high initiate. Well, okay, I knew I had remembered this from somewhere. We try to help others to live rightly, but, you know, we have to assess, is this a go-ahead time? Or is this a time of consolidation? Well, maybe crisis, tension, and emergence are also related to whether we are, you know, building things up, stabilizing, standing, learning how to receive, or whether we're really moving ahead with the energy which can be used or which may be driving us, coming from the soul. This requires a lot of wisdom in the assessment. And I suppose if we read Discipleship in the New Age, we will see DK doing this. Although presumably the people he chose were ready to move ahead with action in the outer world, because so much needed to be done. Who knows exactly how he chose those who were to be members of his outer group. The above thoughts can also be applied by the student of humanity, to the great racial cycles, and much of interest will be discovered. I mean, you know, are we moving ahead or are we consolidating? Are we strengthening? Are we stabilizing? Or are we really moving ahead? We can't be moving ahead all the time until maybe a later phase than humanity finds itself in is finally reached. Well, this is very wise counsel. where is humanity today? The great racial cycles. Well, okay, we're talking about root races, we're talking about sub-races, we're talking about branch races, maybe, as well. I don't know how many divisions there are that have been offered in theosophy, and some will probably be more dynamic according to the ray that rules them than others. And humanity will at times leap ahead, apparently, and at times not make a lot of progress. And then there's also the forces of retrogression, which are intervening in a often negative way. Again, and of more vital importance to us, the cyclic impulses in the life of the disciple in the life of the disciple are of greater frequency and speed and forcefulness than the life of average man. And I suppose, you know, as humanity, which is already sometimes called the world disciple, moves on in its discipleship, the impulses from the soul of humanity will be more rapid. The impulses from the soul of humanity will be more rapid as humanity confirms itself as the world disciple. They alternate in the disciple with distressing rapidity. I went through a period of my life where I was trying to make a decision about medicine or music. I know they seem a little separated, and I'll tell you, in one day I could go through four or five vehement changes. Well, I finally chose music, which was the right direction. They alternate with distressing rapidity. The hill and valley experience, he sometimes talks of that in connection with Aquarius, and so it'll be more common in the age into which we're entering. The hill and valley experience of the mystic is but one way of expressing this ebb and flow. How frequently does it occur? How often, you know, how long do we stay on the hill before we descend into the valley? My experience was about a couple of hours, or maybe less. But, of course, it can last days or maybe even months, you know. So Aquarius is associated with this. Sometimes the disciple is walking in the sunlight and at other times in the dark. The point is he just has to keep walking. What do we say, you know, the old arcane school adage, keep on keeping on. All right. Other times in the dark. Sometimes he knows the joy of full communion. And again, all seems dull and sterile. His service is on occasion a fruitful and satisfying experience, and he seems to be able to really aid. At other times he feels that he has naught to offer and his service is arid. Aridity is an interesting thing, you know, associated with the onset of a fifth ray cycle. And it's a problem for fifth ray types and maybe for those types that are really cultivating the mind. He feels he has naught to offer and his service is arid and apparently without results. I guess all of us have been through this or are going through this. And the further we go, it's likely to happen with increasing frequency. And we have to, remain steady in all of this fluctuation. All is clear to him some days, and he seems to stand on the mountaintop looking out over a sunlit landscape where all is clear to his vision. He knows and feels himself to be a son of God. Later, however, the clouds seem to descend, and he is sure of nothing and seems to know nothing. I'm sure the DK is recounting his own experience. You know, he writes writes from experience. He walks in the sunlight and is almost overpowered by the brilliance and heat of the solar rays and wonders how long this uneven experience and the violent alternation of these opposites is to go on. Let's see how much more we have to go. Yeah, okay, well, this is going to be not going to finish on this one, that's for sure. No, the next one will be the completing. Once, however, he grasps the fact that he is watching the effect of the cyclic impulses and the effect of soul's meditation upon his form, nature, the meaning becomes clearer and he realizes that it is that form aspect which is failing in its response and reacting to energy with unevenness. So it's not just I, you know, that I'm having trouble, it's the form, and I stand back as the disciple, as the soul in incarnation, and I watch the form withdraw and approach, withdraw and approach. I watch it capable of responding, and then followed by a period of incapability, and I try to stay detached, even persistent, determined, ongoing. He then learns that once he can live in the soul consciousness and attain that high altitude, if I might so express it, at will, the fluctuations of the form life will not touch him. Well, anyway, you know, the form may fluctuate, but it will not touch the identity that he has discovered himself to be. He then perceives the narrow-edged razor path, which leads from the plane of physical life to the soul realm. It's an alignment issue, isn't it? And finds that when he can tread it with steadiness, it leads him out of the ever-changing world of, you know, of the mutable cross, we might say, of the common cross, of the experience of constant fluctuation, out of the ever-changing world of the senses into the clear light of day, the light of day. That's an intuitive light eventually. It's the light of Scorpio, it's the light of the Buddhic plane, light of intuition, and as much of the intuition as the soul can absorb. It will lead him out of the ever-changing world of the senses into the clear light of day and into the world of reality. Well, this is, you know, so practical, so beautifully stated, and stated from the experiential point of view. The form side of life then becomes to him simply a field for service and not a field for sensuous perception. Nothing in that form world of the 18 lower subplanes appeals to him finally, and he sees through it all and its evanescence, its impermanence. He sees that you cannot hold it, grasp it. It's simply an aggregation with no reality except the reality that has caused it and coming from higher planes. Let the student ponder upon this last sentence. It's a field for service and not a field for sensuous perception. This is key, isn't it? Are we seeking something in the world of form? You know, after a while you get tired of it all. Pluto comes in, you know, and cuts your attraction to it. Mars may be attracted, but Pluto cuts that. And before long, there's nothing there you want. And the Buddha really emphasized that satiety is reached. Maybe some of us have reached that point, and I remember HBB saying, you know, for many people, theosophy is their last hope. I think she meant that. Let the student ponder upon this last sentence. Let him aim to live as a soul. Then the cyclic impulses emanating from the soul, higher soul, soul in incarnation. See, there's the word soul almost in two sentences, meaning two different things. Then the cyclic impulses emanating from the soul are known to be impulses for which he himself, on the higher planes, is responsible, and which he has sent forth. So, you know, from, you might say, from his higher identity, from his own egoic lotus, and then he knows himself to be the initiating cause and not subject to the effect. So it's a realization of a change of identity, of a higher identity, a change of identity, and a ceasing of identification with the form. All right, I think we're there, friends. This is the goodness, that's not it. So this is the end of A Treatise on White Magic, video commentary, number 15, and page, 64, but where do we begin? That's the big question, you know. I always go on that terrible, unnecessary search. 59. Okay, so 59 to 64, and go back here. It's quite predictable that I'll always lose myself at the end of the program. 59, 64, and then 59 to 64. Okay, and let's see what I did. And here is the, I'm not sure why that's happening, but there it is. I just pressed the wrong thing. Beginning of A Treatise on White Magic, video commentary number 16, which will finish off rule one, and I think so anyway. And starting from page 64. And so this is video commentary number 15 and rule 1.3. I'm putting it that way. It's the third program on rule one. All right, friends, so that's that. And pretty soon I'll take care of that myself. All right. See you soon. Maybe even tonight. Never know. And onward we go.